Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Robin and Her Misfits by Kelly Ann Jacobson, narrated by Eleanor McCormick. Prologue. An hour outside of Phoenix, visitors who know what they are looking for drive down the highway at 100 miles an hour, and then, seemingly out of nowhere, squeal to a stop. There is no sign at the turnoff, but if visitors look closely, they can see an N carved in the trunk of a desert ironwood. From the ironwood, cars follow a dusty dirt road over the mild ups and downs of hills, passing giant saguaro cacti, prickly pear cacti, palo verde trees, and a variety of palms. Feral, rosy-faced lovebirds nest under the palm's fronds and forage for seeds and berries. Lizards bask in the sun. At a second N, visitors turn left and meet the blank face of a building. Nottingham, the building proclaims in austere letters. A greenhouse to their right contains tropical flowers pressed against the glass. A garden to the left is full of ripe fruits and vegetables ready for picking. Only the founders know the real secret behind this utopia.
"Well, hi there," says a middle-aged woman in an unfamiliar southern drawl.
She wears a cowboy hat over her chin-length brown hair, and her wheelchair sports a sticker that says Pride in rainbow letters.
"Welcome to Nottingham. Y'all just make yourselves at home. If you need anything, just holler Skillet, and I'll get you where you're going, you hear?"
There is a map nearby, and visitors check their cottage assignments. Behind the main building, which contains the mess hall and classrooms where the girls will take their summer classes, are 10 cottages labeled A through J. Farther back, 3 houses take up the rest of the map space but aren't labeled. From the brochures, visitors know that the founders live there, and that they will give keynote addresses every morning after breakfast in the Daisy Chain Auditorium. Their schedules, ordering them to computer science, statistics, ethics, and biology classes every day for the next week, are safely packed in their bags.
"That's her,"
one girl whispers. She points her parents in the direction of a woman in hiking boots, cargo pants, and a tank top with sweat circles under her arms. Her long red hair is tied up in a ponytail stuck through the back of a baseball cap.
"That's Robin. Her real name is... well, no one knows. Anyway, she's the woman who founded this whole place."
Other celebrities make their appearances. Little John stands out from the crowd with her trademark fitted blazer, and Wanda's glasses are bigger than ever as she blinks through them at their new recruits. White Rabbit scurries past them too, her cheeks buried by the burning Arizona sun. All the original members of Nottingham are there, except one, who exists only as a name on the side of a building. They shake hands, make introductions, calm the nerves by making silly math jokes. Once the girls have chosen bunks and stored their trunks at the foot of them, they kiss their parents goodbye and head to the auditorium for orientation. Many of the adults will go home, but some will take tiny knots up on its offer of one free night at the Knot in Phoenix and turn the week into a vacation, in the meantime spending hundreds of dollars on drinks, slots, and entertainment. When they come back for their children, they will be hungover and sleep-deprived, and the explanations of the differences between C, C++, Java, and some other words they don't understand will flow around them like the water in their hotel room hot tub.
"That's wonderful," they will say, rubbing their temples. "You can tell me about it once we get home."
Most of these girls will grow up to be coders, engineers, CEOs of businesses. Some of them will be thieves. But for now, they are just energetic rabbits hopping across the grounds, or shy mule deer hiding in the shadows of cacti, or occasionally mountain lions prepared to fight for their territory in the harsh terrain of the world outside of Nottingham. They are voices rolling down the hills, and laughter echoing with the bird calls. They are children. Robin watches them from the window of her camper, and thinks of how once, a long time ago, she and the other misfits were children too. how they danced around the campfire in Florida and forgot their worries for a brief time. Little Knot's retreat brings them all together 1 week a month, but soon they will dissipate like water from a dried-up creek. Someone knocks on her door.
Are you ready?
Skillet calls out. Robin is to give the welcome address, as she does at the start of every session. Just a minute. Robin grabs her note cards from the bed, where she once lay with Daisy Chain and quoted Shakespeare, and checks herself in the mirror. Perk up, she tells her frowning face. She must be a beacon for these girls, the kind of example that Daisy Chain would have been. Or maybe still is, Robin thinks, though she knows better.
Robin? Meet you in there,
she yells. Robin listens to the sound of Skillet leaving her trailer. She loves Skillet, but she isn't in the mood for one of her pep talks. She wishes she could go to the greenhouse and work, or take her bike out on the road and let the dust fly. She wishes she could be alone. She is like a mountain lion, preferring to hunt by herself from dawn to dusk. How can she inspire a group of girls to work hard when she can't even inspire herself? Still, Robin aims her feet toward the auditorium anyway. She has a duty to fulfill, and she has never shirked her responsibilities as Nottingham's leader. Not back when it was just 5 girls who had no idea what they were doing, and not now, when it is 100 girls who know exactly where they're headed. Robin passes the welcome booth, where Adele, Skillet and White Rabbit's daughter, waits to check latecomers into their online system. She looks so young in her oversized Tiny Knot's Retreat t-shirt and khaki shorts, but 2 nights ago, Skillet took her driving for the first time.
I nearly peed myself,
Skillet confessed when she came over for a drink that night.
I'll tell you, that girl might be my daughter, but she has way more of White Rabbit in her.
What's the count?
Robin calls out.
Only missing 5,
Adele yells back,
and one of them called to say her flight was delayed.
Robin waves to Adele, and then enters through the back door by swiping her access card. She always wonders about those few girls who never show up, about whether they just got nervous about leaving home for a week, or whether they are like Daisy Chain, barreling down a highway in the car of a stranger, running away. If the second is true, she hopes that they find their fellow misfits soon. Once inside, Robin pulls her shirt away from her sweating body to allow herself to cool. Then she follows the babble of excited voices down the hall to the door marked backstage, and then to the edge of the thick red curtain. Skillet is there waiting for her, and as soon as she sees Robin, she nods and moves to the center of the stage to give her introduction. The whole room goes quiet to listen.
I am honored to introduce a very special guest, Skillet begins. Many of you know her as the founder of the Tiny Knot's Retreat, but Robin is so much more than that.
Robin knows the rest of the speech by heart, though every time she listens to it, she still marvels at how she could be the subject. Junior police academy failure, then thief, leader of thieves, car mechanic, thief again, finally founder. Though she never quite feels she can take credit for what is really Daisy Chain's dream. Skillet whistles like she's calling pigs for slop. The crowd goes silent. But for some reason, this time, Robin doesn't move. She can't. Her memories are like the wind that whips against her cheek as she barrels down a highway at 90. In the present, all of Nottingham is the fading background in her rearview mirror. How can she sell the idea of doing good when Daisy Chain's disappearance was Robin's fault? How can she stand up here and proclaim she knows what's best for these girls? How can she do anything but run away? Skillet angles her head from the microphone and whispers, "You coming?" Robin turns to her and motions for her to keep going with a roll of her hands.
So, I guess Robin can't give her speech today, Skillet begins. But I'll do my best to replace her, and to stop myself from making any lame jokes.
though really my whole life felt like one bad joke until I found Nottingham. What do you get when you cross a queer girl, a getaway car driver, and a Southern belle? Honestly, I'm still finding out the punchline for that one. But at least I have a group of friends who have my back, no matter who I decide to be.
The girls listen, enraptured. Their faces are bright in the warm auditorium lighting. Their hands are clasped in their laps. Behind the stage, Robin feels something strong inside of her break, like the limb of a wind-whipped live oak. She starts to cry. Skillet tells the girls about her upbringing in Georgia and the way she used to dance around their farm in rubber boots, how her father once sent her to a conversion camp with the warning that if it didn't work, he never wanted to see her face again, how after she left, she made money as a Shania Twain impersonator, singing, "Man, I feel like a woman," on street corners in a veil and top hat. Then she sings a few lines. The girls are mesmerized. The ones that know the song join in, belting the lyrics to the chorus, and the rest clap and holler. Once the crowd settles down again, Skillet tells the girls about her wife, White Rabbit, and how she was given up for adoption, how she ran away from her fifth foster home with $5 and a stolen Dell laptop, how for a long time she wished she had never been born. Without the Merry Misfits, she says, the two of them would probably still be out hustling for a few bucks. Instead, they made themselves a new home, a safe space where they could be themselves.
"This is your safe space," she tells the auditorium of girls. "You might hit some obstacles along the way, but you'll do what families are supposed to do. Support each other so that you can all be the best versions of yourselves."
The best version of yourselves. But what was Daisy Chain's best version? Portia? Rosalind? Viola? It's been 20 years since she disappeared, and Robin still doesn't know. Soon, Little John will go back to her casino empire with Wanda, who runs her own surveillance company, and Skillet and White Rabbit will go back to their house in Georgia. Robin will be the only one left, married, as the Misfits claim, to the Earth of Arizona. Robin's name is getting louder and louder.
"Robin?" Skillet is calling. "Robin, can you please come to the stage?"
"Don't think about the past," Robin scolds, the way she used to over and over again in the Florida forest. "Focus on the road." But this time, all she can focus on is her. Part 1. Robin. Chapter 1. The road ahead of Robin was empty, save for one long truck plowing through the Florida humidity like a bull through a red cape. The silver letters of the company name, More for Less, were scattered in a way that made the two words look like horns, and they glinted in the early morning sun. Around the straight shot of I-10 was a wall of trees she'd been whipping past for 30 minutes. These were the way she noted the distance between her and her mark, along with the occasional rest stop. Her cell phone rang, and she answered it with her earpiece.
"It's time for Robin to leave the nest,"
a distorted voice said. "Copy that. Robin leaving the nest." Robin leaned forward, squeezed the Yamaha's clutch lever in and out, and twisted the throttle toward her, simultaneously pressing the pedal of her motorcycle like an equestrian kicking her heels. The truck came into focus. She could read the caution sign on the back door. According to the warning, she should stay back at least 200 feet, though of course she had no intention of doing so. A dusty red truck swerved onto the highway at 20 miles over the speed limit and took the right lane. At the wheel was a brunette wearing a cowboy hat and aviator sunglasses, and in the passenger seat, the top of a shorter girl's head was barely visible over the door. Both driver and passenger looked at Robin, who nodded as best she was able with her head covered by her helmet. The cowgirl accelerated. Robin accelerated. Like two synchronized skaters, the car and motorcycle changed places, with Robin slightly ahead. The More for Less truck was only 100 feet away, then 50, then 10.
Robin choked on exhaust, and then she was past the edge of the truck and at its side, riding the shoulder. The road was bumpier there, rattling her whole body. She pushed the motorcycle even faster until she could see the driver through the window. Pudgy guy, dusty blue baseball cap, burger wrapper on the dash.
"What are you doing?"
he yelled through his half-open window. His face was red and furious.
"You're going to get yourself killed."
Robin's cell phone rang again, and she kept the motorcycle balanced with one hand and answered.
"Fly,"
the husky voice said. Robin took a deep breath, filling her lungs with oxygen, exhaust, and humidity. Her muscles clenched and unclenched, like a boxer punching his gloves together before a match. Then she swung her right leg up and secured her foot on the seat, crouched so that she had all her weight on that foot, and leapt from the motorcycle to the truck, finding a hold on the handle and balance on the step. Her own vehicle careened off the road into the trees, and she said a little prayer for her departed baby. Wind whipped against her helmet, so she threw it off, revealing her face to the scared driver. His eyes squinted. He was probably thinking, "What's a red-headed punk doing on my truck? Is she even old enough to drive?" This was what she intended. She wanted him to underestimate her. Robin reached through the window to unlock the door. She had done this so many times before that the steps, balancing her weight on the frame of the window, letting the door swing wildly open like a bull bucking her off, and then circling the door and jumping inside before it slammed closed behind her, were automatic. They were a dance, and Robin was the experienced choreographer. The clap of the door falling into place made the driver jump.
"Are you crazy?"
he screamed. Then he slammed against the brakes, making them squeal. Robin got herself buckled into the passenger seat just in time, and though her neck whipped forward toward the dirty, bug-crusted windshield, she trusted that the driver wouldn't put his own life at risk. Sure enough, the stop was abrupt, but not dangerously so.
"Are you some kind of runaway?" the driver asked. "Why didn't you just put your thumb out like a normal kid would do?"
Robin smiled at him. "I'm not a normal kid." And she wasn't even a kid anymore, not since her 18th birthday a month ago. But it was better not to deal in numbers. When he gave the police report, his description of 15 or 16 at the most would only add to her mystery.
"I can see that."
The driver seemed to calm down at the sound of her voice, which she'd said at a purposefully charming tone. He leaned toward her a little, his belly straining against the belt.
"What do you want then, if it's not a ride?"
A little closer, Robin thought. Slowly, she unzipped her jacket pocket. The driver leaned in, continued to lean so that she could see the redness of his sleep-deprived eyes.
"Now."
She reached into her leather jacket to the secret pocket, removed a pair of handcuffs, and in one quick snap, locked the driver's hands together. Then she leaned back, pulled her legs up onto her seat, and kicked the driver squarely in the chest, sending him out his door and into the waiting arms of Skillet and Little John.
"Oof," Skillet grunted, though she was several feet taller than Little John. "This guy weighs like 1,000 pounds, and he's ugly as homemade sin."
Robin made a mental note to increase Skillet's morning training by 30 minutes. 2 more laps around camp, 30 more squats, and 15 more push-ups. She'd also need to have a firm discussion with her about her heist attire. In this case, boot-cut blue jeans and a crop top with fringe, though she couldn't resist smiling at one of Skillet's southernisms. Little John, who never said much, looked at Skillet and then rolled her eyes. She had followed Robin's instructions, arriving in a sensible black turtleneck and comfortable black jeans. Her short black hair was smeared in a comb-over, which Robin knew from experience wouldn't get tussled even if a fight broke out.
"Leave Little John to watch him," Robin instructed Skillet. "You and I have work to do."
Robin removed the keys from the truck, jumped down, and circled around to the back, where Skillet had parked the red truck backwards.
"Please be there. Please be there."
Then she confidently lifted the door to find boxes upon boxes of flat-screen televisions. Robin hopped up and eyeballed the measurements of one of them, 53 inches by 32 inches by 7 inches, and then did a little mental math with the 7-foot compact long bed of their truck. She should have asked Little John, the math genius, to figure it out, but she couldn't bear admitting that she struggled to do even basic division.
"We can fit 12 straight in," Robin finally determined. They had to be fast now, so Skillet handed down each box, and Robin packed it onto their truck bed while counting down the seconds.
The whole operation had to take less than 5 minutes, the amount of time it usually took the cops to notice what they were doing, and they only had a minute to get their butts in the truck and drive away.
30 seconds. 10.
Before she turned away, Robin pulled off the 200-foot warning sign and threw it into the back with the TVs.
"Little John," Robin yelled out.
She waited for Skillet to get out of the More for Less truck and then close the door with a victorious crash, while Skillet got in the driver's seat of her own truck and started the engine. Robin got in the passenger seat, and Little John hopped up onto her lap. Robin knew she would hear about this later, demeaning to short people and all of that. But for now, she focused on the work ahead. Not only did they need to outdrive the cops, but they needed to get back to their hideout undetected. Robin's phone rang.
"We're in," she said. "White Rabbit, take us down the hole."
Skillet peeled away, spinning dust behind them. Robin imagined White Rabbit hunched over her keyboard, chewing nervously on a sour straw as she hacked into the security cameras along their route and rendered them invisible. Her fingers were probably flying over the keys, clacking them like rain on a roof. Robin collected headsets from Skillet and Little John, added hers to the pile, and tossed them out the truck window so that they landed ahead of the wheels for Skillet to run over. Everything was disposable on a job. And everyone. Chapter 2. Skillet turned onto Nottingham Road, a dusty, narrow lane carved through the trees. To any other driver, the road looked like a dead end, just another false path through the maze of Florida wildlife. And that was exactly what the Merry Misfits wanted them to think. Dozens of drivers had come down this exact path and then turned, their bumpers brushing against iron plants and elephant ears, and the other underbrush the Merry Misfits used to keep the wall dense and green. They knew this because they had watched each one, held their breath, exhaled when every frustrated driver sent a curse out their rolled-down windows and peeled back onto the highway. Only when this truck, or one of Skillet's previous rides, came down Nottingham Road did the end, a gate covered weakly in new plants by the green-thumbed daisy chain, swing away to reveal the rest of Nottingham Road.
"Welcome home," White Rabbit yelled out, only glancing from the security cameras in her guard post long enough to wave a hand in their direction.
The door to the post was open, revealing Daisy Chain, who sat in the other swivel chair in the office. She smiled dreamily and then removed a dandelion from behind her ear and tossed it to Robin.
"How romantic," said Little John with an eye roll.
"Don't be jealous, Little John," Robin said. She kissed her best friend on the cheek.
"I'm not jealous." Little John wiped her cheek with her palm. "I'm just worried that you'll get distracted."
Robin laughed as the truck came to a stop and the gate swung slowly closed behind them. Skillet left Robin and Little John to take the extra seat in the guard post next to White Rabbit, her girlfriend. So Daisy Chain ambled over to the truck and asked if they needed help.
"Can you even lift one of these boxes?" asked Little John.
Daisy Chain gave another dreamy smile.
"We are such stuff as dreams are made on."
Little John looked pointedly at Robin.
"See what I mean? It's distracting just trying to figure out what she's saying half the time."
"Be nice, Little John," Robin scolded.
She put her arm around Daisy Chain's waist and said,
"I like the way you talk, Daisy." "This above all? To thine own self be true," Daisy Chain responded.
Robin still remembered the first time she had seen the girl who had become Daisy Chain sitting in front of a rest stop near Lake City, braiding flowers into a crown. Her dirty blonde braids were a wild haze around her blank white face. Her pale fingers fidgeted the stems like an old woman worrying beads. When Robin crouched down next to her, she didn't look up from her work, and Robin realized the girl was humming to herself. "Are you here alone?" Robin asked the girl, who dropped the flowers but didn't look up. "Parting is such sweet sorrow," Daisy Chain whispered. "Romeo and Juliet?" Robin thought she remembered the line from 2 years ago, the last time she set foot in a high school classroom. Daisy Chain raised her wide green eyes. They watered, and then a tear fell on the head of a daisy. "Listen," Robin said. "Me and some other runaways have a place near here. If you want, I can take you there, but I'll have to blindfold you until I know I can trust you." The girl seemed to think the proposition over. She took up the flowers again and petted them lightly with the tips of her fingers. "Love all, trust a few, do wrong to none," she finally said. And though Robin wasn't sure if that was an answer or a command, Daisy Chain allowed Robin to take her yellow and orange woven bag and sling it over her shoulder. Robin wondered what was in there, clanging against her back like a percussion section. She later found out the only things Daisy Chain had packed when she left home were 5 sets of knitting needles, armfuls of wilted flowers, a loaf of smushed bread, and an empty milk jug full of change that had spilled into the bottom of the sack. Now, Daisy Chain was as unhelpful as ever, watching Little John and Robin unload the TVs as she plucked purple petals off sun-browned spear thistle and rained them on the ground. "She's a regular Ophelia," Little John said. "If only she'd do us all a favor and..."
"Enough," Robin said sharply.
Little John huffed and then lifted one of the TVs without another word. 1 set belonged to each girl, so the first 5 had to be carried to their various trailers via the winding path through high grass. When Robin and Little John, the first Merry Misfits, had found the foreclosed lot, rattlesnakes had hold of the land and needed to be shot dead from the steps of the rusty trailer with Little John's pistol. Once they had even had to fire the gun through an open window, a determined rattler slithering up and down the door like a branch brushing in the wind. That scratching sound still haunted Robin's nightmares, though she and Little John spent every morning patrolling the property. With the TVs in front of their faces, Robin and Little John had to trust that they'd done a good enough job purging the property, and that a resilient snake wasn't about to dash under a foot or bite an ankle. The trees were quiet today, quieter now that Little John was giving her the silent treatment, but Robin could still pick out the murmur of daily forest life. An osprey or a red-shouldered hawk diving for a mouse, a woodpecker drumming its beak into a tree, 2 squirrels leaping from branch to branch. The path went on for about 100 feet, where the narrow dust hit a wider roundabout. "Just leave them inside the door," Robin reminded Little John. "White Rabbit will hook them up tonight." Little John took a hard right toward her trailer, distinguished by its 1 bush and freshly swept steps, and Robin headed to the 2nd one, where her Adirondack chairs hid beneath a tan canopy. Nottingham had changed a great deal since the early days, and the original trailer had been gutted and used for parts. 5 new trailers, or rather 5 new-to-them trailers stolen from the rest stops, sat around the cul-de-sac like smudges in the dirt. The outsides were all painted in identical dirt brown as not to be conspicuous from above, but each girl had free rein to decorate the front and interior to her own tastes. Robin slid her TV into her trailer, stepped back outside, and shut the door quickly. If there was 1 thing she'd learned about Florida in the past 2 years, it was that the mosquitoes were vicious and would seize any opportunity to get inside. She hated the ringing in her ears as they circled her head, and several nights she had turned the light on and chased a single mosquito around the room for over an hour. Already, sweat dripped from Robin's brow down her cheeks, throat, collar. She slipped off her jacket and slung it over the back of one of the Adirondack chairs, then sat in the other to take a quick breather.
The chairs made up what Robin called her listening corner, where the girls came to air their grievances against the other merry misfits or propose a job to Robin. And the two glasses on
sample complete. Ready to continue?